Two of those people were named Dick and Anita Onorecker. He served a church north of Houston in Klein, Texas. He was on his way back to the church. He's not going anywhere. He's behind me. So he and his wife walk up to the bridge. He approaches the policeman in charge, and he says, "I am a pastor. Is there anybody here I could pray for?" And the policeman says, "No, there's no one here to pray for." And by that he meant all the other victims had been taken away except me, and I was dead, so there was no need to pray for me either. He said, that's the reason he said no. But when he said that, God spoke to this pastor in a very direct way. Now, God can speak in many ways. Sometimes he speaks in a cave. Sometimes he speaks through a bush. Sometimes he speaks directly so we can hear it audibly. That day he spoke audibly. And here's what he said. Pray for the man in the red car. That's what he said. Pray for the man in the red car. Well, this didn't make any sense to this pastor. He was a seminary graduate. He was a student of the Bible. He just didn't see why he should have to be praying for a dead man. But he didn't worry about his theology that day. He was more interested in obedience. God told him to do it, so he said to the policeman, "I need to pray for the man in the red car." And the policeman said, "You hear what I said? He didn't make it. He's dead. We covered him up." "Well, God's told me to pray for him, so I have to pray for him." Well, they began a conversation with each other. Why the preacher should pray for me and why the policeman didn't want him to get near the car because he could be hurt. Twisted metal, broken glass, you know. He didn't want him near the car. Well, this went on for some time. Finally, the pastor prevailed because the policeman said, "Look, you don't want to see what it looks like under that tarp. It's gruesome under there. It's a bloodbath." Pastor said, "I was a medic, an army medic in Vietnam. That won't bother me. I got to get under the tarp." So the policeman allowed him to do it because the justice of the peace, the county official, is still not at the scene to release the body. So he goes over, the pastor does, he's got to get in the car. Well, the front of the car is crushed. If you can see that, that's a newspaper photo, so it's very dim. But that's that tarp under there, there's a tarp inside the car. I'm covered up. And behind me is the pastor. He lifted up the tarp and got in the car with the dead body. And he could see when the tarp was lifted up that I had broken everything on me except my right arm. It's the only thing I didn't break. My son Chris is in there working the PowerPoint on this. Chris said one time, he said, "Daddy, I know why you didn't break your right arm." And I said, "Why?" He said, "So you could sign your books." I'm not sure that makes any sense, but that's what he said. Well, it's the only thing I didn't break, my right arm. So he puts his hand around the headrest of the front seat, and he puts his hand on my right arm, and he starts praying for me under the tarp in the dark, even though it's the middle of the day, because we're covered up. It's raining, and the windows are all gone out of the car. So he's got his hand on me praying. Now, by this time, he's not the only one praying. The church has been notified of my death. Well, not of my death, that I've been in an accident. They called the church, and they called home first. My wife wasn't at home. She's a teacher. She was at school. Our children were still in school. And so they called the church, South Park Church. And the secretary answered the telephone. And at that point, they said, "Do you have a staff member, a minister by the name of Don Piper on your staff?" "Yes." "Is he married?" "Yes." "Does he have children?" "Yes." Why are you asking these questions?" "We're afraid there's been a terrible accident. Mr. Piper's been in an awful accident. Could you try to get everyone together, assemble them all, because we're going to bring you up to date on what happened." They didn't want to tell them on the phone I died. So they just told them there's been a terrible accident. Please bring everyone together. So they did. And so the church now only knows I've been in an accident. They don't know I'm dead. One man knows I'm dead. He's praying for me on the bridge. So these people at the church, the only thing they knew to do is start praying too. I mean, God is never ironic, but life can be ironic. I was on my way to lead a prayer meeting at the church. Now, I became the prayer meeting at the church. They're all praying for me. And they got the phone book out, and they started calling every church in the phone book alphabetically. Denominations didn't have anything to do with it. They just called every church. "Would you pray for Don Piper, one of our pastors? He's been in a terrible accident." Every church said, "Yes, we'll pray for him." "And would you call some more churches and have them pray for him?" "Absolutely." This prayer chain, if you will, began to spread all over southeast Texas. It began to spread into neighboring states. It began to go from one end of the United States to the other. It began to go around the world in a very short period of time. Just 2 weeks ago, in northern Arkansas, a lady came down after a service like this with tears in her eyes. Her name was Maisie. And Maisie says to me as she took my hand, I prayed for you. We were in church that night, and the pastor walked out with a fax to say that a pastor down in church had been in a terrible accident in Texas. You're him, she said. I said, I am. It worked. Well, all these people are praying for me. I'm still meeting people 19 years later who prayed for me that day. They're all blessing God. They're all pleading with God. Let him live. Let him be okay. One man is in the car praying over my dead body, holding onto my right shoulder, under the tarp in the dark. He's now began to sing hymns. And a lot of hymns are prayers, you know, just put to music. In fact, that's why they end with the word amen at the end of the hymn, because it was offered as a prayer. And he's singing a great old hymn called What a Friend We Have in Jesus. That hymn, the first verse says, oh, what peace we often forfeit. Oh, what needless pain we bear, all because we do not carry everything to God in prayer. He's holding onto my shoulder. He's covered up with the body. He's singing that hymn at 1:15 in the afternoon, 90 minutes after the big truck struck me. 11:45, 1:15, 90 minutes. He's holding onto my shoulder. He's singing What a Friend We Have in Jesus. Suddenly there in the car, under the tarp, in the dark, without any warning, I started singing the hymn with him. And he got out of the car really fast. Ran over to the policeman that he begged to get him into the car, and he said, the dead man is singing. And nobody believed him. Because it's unbelievable. I mean, the dead man is singing? What does that mean? Well, Dick Honorecker, the Army medic, can see that there's really only one ambulance left on the bridge. Four had originally come because there were four vehicles involved. And all of them have left except one. And he knows that if I'm not in the back of that ambulance, I'm not going to make it. So he leaves the policeman. He goes over to the ambulance and he says, you've got to come and check on the man in the red car. He's alive. No, he's not, they said. And not only is he not alive, he's been dead for quite some time. Well, I'm telling you, he's alive. I heard him singing. No, sir, that's your imagination. It's not possible. Well, they were getting ready to go back on duty. They were sitting on the bridge, and they had another vehicle standing by to take me away. It wasn't an ambulance. And so they were releasing the ambulance to go back on duty. Well, Dick Honorecker knew I'd better be in that ambulance. So he leaves the side of the ambulance, goes around and stands in front of it, and says out loud for everybody on the bridge to hear it, if you leave here without him on the back of this ambulance, I'm going to lay down here on this bridge, and you'll have to run over me. I'm not moving until you come and check on him. All right, we'll check on him. Well, they went over and lifted up the tarp, and guess what? I was alive. Not very alive, but I was alive. And they sprung into action to try to get me out of that car. They were eventually able to do it. It took a long time. It took a lot of equipment. They put me in the back of that ambulance, and they took me to a clinic at Trinity, which is only about 15 miles away. They did not take me out of the ambulance there. The doctors came out and looked at me in the ambulance and said, there's nothing we can do for him. Take him to the hospital in Huntsville. So they took me to the hospital in Huntsville, a regional hospital. And there, they began to examine me and do CAT scans and MRIs and all those kinds of tests. They decided right away that I was in bad shape and I needed to be taken to a level one trauma center. The nearest one of those, Herman Hospital in Houston. Well, they wanted to life flight me by helicopter. The weather was too bad that day. Helicopters could not take off. Too dangerous. Now in the back of an ambulance traveling 90 miles to Houston to get some help from the only place that could help me. I'm in the back of that ambulance traveling down I-45. By this time, all the shock has worn off. And I'm feeling it. I have so many broken bones and open gaping wounds. Every time my heart beat, it would be like hitting each one of those wounds with a hammer. It was just overwhelmingly painful. I didn't know you could hurt that bad and live to tell about it. I drove along a little while. I said to the EMT that was standing beside me, I said, sir, through my oxygen mask, sir, is there any way you could give me something for pain? He said, no. I've given you everything I can for pain. If I give you any more, you will probably pass out.